A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into a time machine, heading straight back to ancient Rome. We're tackling a question that feels incredibly modern. Why does it always feel like there's never enough time? We're diving into Seneca's really profound first century essay on the shortness of life. De brevitate vitae.
Yeah, and this isn't just some dusty old text. It feels, honestly, like an urgent manifesto for how we manage our time, even now. And Seneca's main point, it just immediately challenges that thing we all say, you know, life's too short. He says we're basically misunderstanding the whole situation.
A misunderstanding. I mean, most of us feel like time's just flying by, right? Like, yeah. You need three lifetimes to get everything done.
Exactly. But Seneca flips it. He says the problem isn't the amount of time we get. Life's actually long enough, potentially. The real issue is the quality of our attention, where we actually put that time. We aren't handed a short life. We actively make it short because we waste so much of the time we have.
Wow. Okay. That's a heavy premise. It really puts the responsibility squarely back on us, doesn't it? All right. Let's get into this. Our mission today is to unpack Seneca's diagnosis of what he calls the poorly lived life. You know, the life ruled by distraction, and then look at the Stoic solution for living more intentionally, and hopefully make this ancient wisdom feel, well, shockingly relevant for our own super distracted lives today. But first, before we get into the essay itself, we should probably talk a bit about the author, Lucius Annaeus Seneca. First century AD, he wasn't just some philosopher scribbling away. He was a big deal, a statesman, a successful playwright. And this is key, incredibly wealthy and powerful.
And that context is just so important for understanding his authority here. Seneca wasn't meditating on a mountainside. He was right there in the arena, as they say. He saw life from the absolute top. He was even advisor and tutor to Emperor Nero. You know, that Nero.
Wait a minute. Doesn't that seem a bit contradictory? He's preaching virtue and simplicity, but he's tangled up in imperial politics and swimming in money.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge tension. And he lived that tension. But I think that's what makes his critique so powerful, so insightful. He's not some academic just theorizing about detachment. He's describing the emptiness of worldly ambition because he lived it. He knew the game intimately.
Ah, I see.
And he saw its hollowness. I mean, his eventual end, being forced by Nero to commit suicide, just hammers home how fragile all that worldly power really is.
So when he warns about chasing status or getting lost in distractions, he's speaking from experience. He's basically saying, been there, done that, didn't find happiness.
Precisely. His authority comes from knowing those traps firsthand. He saw how power and wealth don't grant freedom. They often just consume your time even faster.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's turn to the essay itself. It's framed as a moral letter, right? To his friend Paulinus.
That's right. Paulinus was a busy guy, a top Roman official in charge of the grain supply. So think intense pressure, constant demands. And the essay is basically this powerful, urgent wake-up call to Paulinus, yes, but really to all of us. Stop drifting. Start living deliberately. And Seneca diagnoses this sort of spiritual sickness he calls being occupati.
Occupati. I like that word. How would you translate that for today? It feels like more than just being busy.
Oh, much more. It's like being preoccupied or maybe constantly busy, but fundamentally unproductive in the art of actually living. Mm-hmm. The occupati are the people whose lives are just filled with noise, with obligations, often things they never really consciously chose. Seneca says they're busy with everyone else's life but their own.
That sounds uncomfortably familiar. So what's the cure? What's Seneca's prescription for this constant state of being preoccupied?
He argues for what he calls true leisure, odium. And this is really crucial. Odium is absolutely not laziness or idleness. It's not binge-watching Netflix, basically.
Right.
It's a deliberate, active withdrawal from worthless distractions to engage in things like self-reflection, studying philosophy, pursuing virtue, finding inner peace. It's actually the most focused kind of work you can do.
Okay, that clarifies things. It's intentional engagement, not just vegging out. Which brings us to this central paradox he points out early on, right? About how we value stuff versus time.
Yes. It's almost comical when he lays it out. Think about it. If someone tried to steal your money or damage your property, you'd fight tooth and nail. You'd call the guards, get lawyers involved. Yet we let colleagues, social media, endless news cycles, trivial worries just steal hours, days, weeks of our time, the one thing we can never, ever get back, and we barely even notice it's happening.
It's like we treat time as if it's infinite right up until the very end. And Seneca mentions that crushing regret people feel on their deathbeds, suddenly realizing they never actually lived because they were too busy with, well, everything else.
Exactly. That awareness hits, but it's way too late for the occuparity. And to really drive this home, Seneca gives this brilliant, vivid list, a kind of catalog of vanity showing exactly how lives get frittered away.
Let's try and put a modern spin on those. Like, who's the political climber he talks about? The one enduring endless humiliation to get to the top.
Oh, that's definitely the person grinding away on the corporate ladder or maybe obsessed with social status. You know, spending their life sucking up to bosses, going to tedious networking events they hate, putting up with nonsense, all the while telling themselves, okay, once I get that promotion, then I'll relax, then I'll live. But they reach the top old and worn out and realize they've got no energy or time left to enjoy the very thing they sacrificed everything for.
Ouch. Okay. And what about the person obsessed with luxury, the elaborate banquets? That feels very relevant to today's sort of performative consumption culture.
Totally. That's the person enslaved by their appetites, right? Always needing the newest gadget, the most exclusive holiday, the perfect Instagram shot of a life they're too busy documenting to actually experience. They end up serving their possessions or their online image instead of their things serving them.
Yeah, I see that. But the critique that really surprised me was his attack on useless scholarship, especially now in our information age.
Right. He wasn't against learning, obviously, but he condemned being overly pedantic, the person memorizing obscure facts just for the sake of it. Or, you know, today, maybe that's the person endlessly doom scrolling, getting sucked into online arguments, binge watching deep dives on niche topics, not for actual wisdom or application, but just as another maybe slightly higher brow form of distraction.
So it's busyness, even intellectual busyness, but it's distracting from the main job, learning how to actually live well.
Exactly. They're busy, sure, but distracted from the vital task.
So if we're wasting time on these vanities, this sort of meaningless busyness, how does Seneca say that affects our relationship with time itself? He talks about the past, present, and future, right?
Yeah, he breaks it down. And he says the preoccupied person fundamentally mismanages all three. Most crucially, maybe, they abuse the future. They live in this state of constant expectation, always deferring happiness. I'll start living when I retire, or when the kids leave home, or when I finish this big project. Seneca warns, this expectancy is the single biggest obstacle to actually living, because while you're waiting for tomorrow, you completely lose today.
But why is that so tempting? Why do we do that? We all sort of know tomorrow isn't guaranteed.
Well, deep down, I think we live as if we're immortal, don't we? And this is where that core Stoic idea of memento mori, remembering you will die, comes in. Seneca uses it not to be depressing, but to bring clarity. When you truly grasp that your time is finite, suddenly it seems absurd to waste the present on trivialities or to keep planning for a future you don't control while ignoring the present moment, which you do control.
Ah, okay. So memento mori isn't morbid, it's motivational. And because they're always looking ahead, the present just slips by. Unnoticed.
Completely unnoticed. Or worse, it's just seen as an obstacle, something to get through quickly to reach that imagined future payoff.
And what about the past? For these preoccupied people.
Well, consequently, when they do look back, their memories offer no real comfort. They're often filled with regret, shame, maybe just a blur of forgotten obligations because they weren't truly present when those moments were happening. They lived them unconsciously.
Okay, so that's the picture of the preoccupied life. Basically living for others, always procrastinating. What's Seneca's alternative? How does a wise person live differently? How do they claim their time?
Well, they cultivate that odium, that true act of leisure we talked about, dedicating time to self-reflection, philosophy. But the really profound idea, I think, is what Seneca calls annexing the past.
Annexing the past. That sounds almost aggressive. What does he mean by that?
It's powerful, isn't it? He argues that when you study the great thinkers, people like Zeno, Plato, Aristotle, you're not just reading passively. You're actually entering into a dialogue with them. You're inviting them into your life as advisors, as companions. And by doing this, you effectively add their centuries of wisdom, their experiences, their insights onto your own lifespan.
Whoa. Okay, that completely changes the perspective. So you're not just limited to your own, say, 80 years. You get to draw on thousands of years of human thought.
That's the idea. You learn from their mistakes, you absorb their wisdom, your life becomes immensely richer, deeper, and in a way, longer, because it's enriched by all this accumulated human experience.
So the measure of a life isn't just its length in years, but its breadth and depth of wisdom.
Precisely. And Seneca says the wise are the only ones who are truly free because they're the only ones who have truly claimed ownership of their time in this way.
That's a fantastic synthesis. And it leads us perfectly into the more practical takeaways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do we take this ancient wisdom and apply it now?
Yeah, let's boil it down. Theme one has to be, time is your most precious non-renewable asset. We need to adopt Seneca's kind of economic thinking about it. Be fiercely protective, almost frugal with your days. You guard your bank account, right? You need to guard your time even more closely because once it's spent, it's gone forever.
Yeah. And theme two follows directly. Busyness is often a sickness. That critique of the occupativity is such a direct hit on our modern culture, where being constantly busy is almost like a status symbol. We need to really question that. Is all this activity actually productive? Or is it, as Seneca suggests, often just a way to avoid confronting something deeper, maybe an emptiness or a lack of real purpose?
Exactly. Which leads straight into theme three, living for yourself or maybe reclaiming your autonomy. Seneca's big critique is against what he calls self-imposed slavery, living your life based on what other people expect. Chasing fame, status, likes, true leisure, odium is the act of taking back control. Deciding for yourself how your time, your life is going to be spent.
He really did have a gift for lines that just cut through everything. We should definitely share a few of those key quotes that really stick with you.
Absolutely. The first one is the core thesis, you just can't forget it. It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste a lot of it.
Boom. Right there. Shifts the blame, or rather the responsibility, straight back to us. No excuses about fate.
Exactly. And then there's that powerful warning against procrastination, against always waiting for tomorrow. The greatest obstacle to living is expectancy, which hangs upon tomorrow and loses today. He follows up. You are arranging what lies in fortune's control and abandoning what lies in yours.
That's pure stoicism, isn't it? Focus only on the present moment, the only thing you actually control, the only time you're actually alive.
Mm-hmm. And finally, his definition of who is actually living fully. Of all people, only those are at leisure who make time for philosophy. Only they truly live. Which again means redefining leisure not as laziness, but as that active, intentional choice to pursue wisdom and self-improvement over just distractions.
Okay, so let's get really practical now. How can listeners take these ideas and actually do something with them, like today or this week?
I think the most powerful starting point is what you might call a Seneca time audit. Seriously. Track your time for a week, meticulously. Don't just track work. Track the time lost to scrolling social media, watching shows you don't even really enjoy, running errands that maybe weren't essential. Be honest, then measure the gap between the life you say you value and where your time actually goes. It can be revealing.
That sounds potentially painful, but probably necessary. And building on that idea of annexing the past, maybe the application is about consciously curating your inputs. Like actively choosing not to let the loudest, angriest, most temporary voices of the moment dominate your headspace. Choosing instead to spend some of that leisure time engaging with timeless ideas, great books, thoughtful reflection. Maybe Marcus Aurelius instead of Twitter argument.
Yes, that's exactly it. Accumulate wisdom, not just information or outrage. And my final practical tip, which is crucial for actually creating space for that otium, is master the art of saying no. No. We let so many demands steal our time because we feel obligated or we don't want to disappoint people. But Seneca would say valuing your own time enough to politely decline things that don't align with your core priorities. That's the first step to reclaiming your life from that occupative trap.
That really is a call for a pretty radical shift in how we see things. That the real measure of a life isn't just how long it is, but its depth, its quality, its meaning.
And the challenge Seneca leaves us with really comes back to that clarifying power of memento mori, remembering that it's finite. When you truly accept that your time isn't unlimited, it suddenly becomes much easier to see what's truly important and what's just.
Yeah.
Noise. Trivial stuff falls away. You can't really afford to procrastinate on living wisely when you know the clock is ticking.
So the question Seneca forces us, and you listening, to ask is, if you truly accepted your time was limited, what would you start doing today? And maybe just as importantly, what would you quit? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acantra Foundation.